Ladies and gentlemen, that weird sound in the background is Coach Whit LeJour, and I am Coach Gene Clemens. Thank you for joining us once again. Another episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. This is episode, actually, I have no clue what episode it is. You know what? This is what happens when you take a couple weeks off.
I think we're 10 or 11.
Episode 10 or 11.
That's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it that. It's episode 10 or 11.
We're gonna roll with episode 10 or 11. Thank you for joining us wherever you are joining us. We appreciate it. It's been a very eventful last few weeks. And you know, sometimes life gets in the way and you can't pod. And so that's what happened. We had life getting in the way. We couldn't pod, but we're back now. And we're happy to be able to sit down and do some talking again. And there's a lot going on. Obviously, the Super Bowl is this Sunday, and that has become a national event. People who watch the Super Bowl, they don't just watch because they're football fans. They just watch because it's appointment viewing. And I think with that, we get a lot of people who put their eyes on football, who have never really put their eyes on football or don't regularly put their eyes on football. And one of the things they would see right now is they would see that the diversity hiring in the NFL leaves a lot to be desired.
Well, let's back up. Before we get too serious, let's back up and say, like, a lot of eyes are on football, but a lot of eyes are not on football. So L.A. is a major market, but there's so many darn teams that either have been in L.A., will be in L.A., left L.A., that really no one, particularly on the East Coast, this is East Coast bias, nobody really gives a shit about L.A. I say that respectfully. That's not true. But, and then they're playing the Bengals, who I love, but frankly, ain't drawing the biggest rating. So I'm going to say this Super Bowl, because it doesn't feature Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, name your guy, okay, which, again, is going to go a lot like the China Olympics. The viewership is going to be down.
Interesting. That's an interesting take from a New England Patriots fan. You do realize that most of the United States, they don't care at all about New England. It's only New England that thinks that everybody cares about New England.
I do think New England is stuck on itself. I know, yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, yeah. But Bob Kraft and that run combined with the fortunes in the 21st century of the Celtics, which have been so-so. The Red Sox, more famously, Bruins to some degree, make it arguably the best sports town in the country. So it has to be recognized as that.
I mean, it can be whatever it wants to be. It's still regional, though. Like, I think that's the thing that we're not that we need to remember about the Super Bowl, is that the Super Bowl draws people even if they don't care about football. So you're telling me that people in New England are not going to watch the Super Bowl because Tom Brady's not there? Like, come on, man. They're watching.
No, I'm telling you, a lot of people will watch, but I don't think it'll be one of the most watched. And I think it'll just be people doing a lot of drinking while they and a little less watching.
I think that's been the case forever. I think people have been doing a lot of drinking and playing drinking games and watching for the commercials and watching for the halftime show as opposed to watching for the game. The hardcores are going to still watch the game, but what happens when you get all of these casuals here is they start to see and then talk about some of the issues that the sport has dealt with. Or that might be on the forefront of what the sport's going, what's going on in the sport right now. And what's going on in the sport right now is not the greatest stuff in the world.
Right, but stop pushing me to serious. I'll get there. Okay, what I'm telling you is like this regional BS that you're promoting. It's like the Cowboys, right? They were America's team for a reason. So you can't sit there and argue, well, America's team was actually regional. No, baloney. And the Patriots, basically, the Patriots usurped the Cowboys. No. And furthermore, yes, furthermore, the if this Super Bowl had been Kansas City and Mahomes, uh-huh. against, I heard that from someone online or on TV.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah. If it had been KC at What an Explosive Show versus take your pick, I'll say Green Bay, Dallas, possibly LA. Okay. Who the heck did LA beat to get there?
Tampa.
Or Tampa. Let's go Tampa. Let's go KC Tampa. Bigger Super Bowl than this one. I rest my case. Let's get serious.
Okay, well, before you rest your case, how about this? KC and Tampa played last year in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So we're going to get a 1-1. We'll find out exactly if you're right or you're wrong. I think that the hardcore fan is probably more disappointed than the casual is, because the casual was never coming for Mahomes. Never coming for Tom Brady. They were coming because that's what you do on Super Bowl Sunday.
You drink. I'm just glad I made you stop and think for just even a second.
No, it's trust me. I want to just go you're crazy, but I can't go you're crazy.
You can.
No, it's not even, not even 10 minutes.
The numbers don't lie, so I like what you said. Let's see what the numbers say. Yeah, let's see what the numbers say.
Let's see what happens. I will say this, though. Dallas, America's team, based off of the fact that there are more Cowboys fans everywhere than any other fan base. The Patriots, not America's team, because the majority of the Patriots fans are all in New England.
Well, they're now, some of them, half of them are in Tampa. And Tampa, no, Tampa has a lot of New Englanders down there. That's been a destination. Tampa and Nashville has been a big-time New England destination.
Yeah, okay? But even with that, they're Tampa's regional.
No question.
So, like, even if they have migrated to Tampa.
And that's my argument, by the way. That's my argument, because Brady made Tampa relevant, per se. Made it a great story. Yeah, Brady made Tampa relevant.
I mean, Tampa made Brady relevant.
That too. That worked in hand in hand. Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, I agree. Hey, that's Belichick Brady, Tampa Brady. Same thing.
Yeah,
Can't have one without the other.
Yeah, but I think that Tampa legitimized Brady beyond Belichick.
Yeah, I agree with that. Am I going to shout at you the entire podcast, or am I going to calm down?
Possibly, okay. But I like it because you're fired up. You came in with the hands clapping, and I'm not trying to pull that back. Let's just keep it rolling. You know,
I wanted, because you kept this thing going. So I'm not trying to have the last word, because you were trying to have the last word. So you can have the last word again. But here's the deal, Dallas, and you're right that Dallas was America's team because they got outside of Dallas, right? In a different way. Okay. Here's how New England did it. You either like them, which is primarily in New England, which is your argument, or you despise them, you hated them. And that was outside New England, and that's well documented, whether it's Spygate or Deflategate or any other gate. So New England had something kind of novel going on. It was America's team by virtue not just of everyone's attention and love, but also of everyone's hatred. Huh.
Okay. So... When we speak of things that America looks at, one of the things that America has been looking at is the hiring practices, amongst other things. By the way, the NFL seems to get all of these things wrong. That's a better question. Instead of what has the NFL gotten right? Like what thing has the NFL been in front of before anyone else was, that we could go, hey, you know what? The NFL got this right.
Beer commercials.
Okay. So nothing that nothing of actual worth or value to the human existence.
Complete entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. They got all of the stuff that helps them make more money. Correct. Yes.
100% right.
All of the things that get all the money, the NFL is fantastic at that. And you would think with all of these creative, bright, young minds all over the place in the NFL, that they would better get right all of the things that they tend to get wrong. When it comes to how to
like America, hey, like America, they are moving absurdly slowly, and you could even, I'm being nice about it.
Well, that brings up another issue, though. I think not another issue, but that brings up the issue of, is the NFL just a smaller sample size of America?
I believe largely from a sport and society standpoint, the answer to that question is yes.
Because
and maybe trying to evolve into something, but organizations like the NBA have been, as you know, way in front of that for a very, very long time. So it's no comparison.
They've been in front of it from a very long, long time when it comes to player empowerment, when it comes to standing up for things that are wrong within their society. I believe the NBA has been great on it.
Not the leadership, within the organizations.
Absolutely, but not as great with the coaching. I will say nope. It's still.
But,
to the NFL, they're
right.
They're Chance. Harriet Tubman.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the problem, right? Because it's not just the NFL. But we have to paint the NFL because the NFL, they swing the biggest hammer. They could make changes the quickest. And yet, because they know, and this is the part that really irks me, people are going to watch regardless. They've proved it. Domestic violence issues. You know what? People still watching. Issues with race and how race is done and taking a look at in society. Doesn't matter. People still watch. You blackball Colin Kaepernick. They still watch. Like, I mean, at every turn, the wrong thing to do is what the NFL does. Hey,
rule changes. It's a sissy game. They still watch. Taunting, people aren't going to want to watch a bunch of people excessively celebrate. They still watch. In fact, people want to see people celebrate.
Yep, and now they're penalizing the stuff that people want to see, and they still watch.
100%.
The NFL is bulletproof. Teams that don't ever really legitimately try to win, and yet people still watch. And so, like, when you say, man, if it's bulletproof, well, why not, if we have a product that is always, people need it because it's a part of who they are. If we know that, if we're that bulletproof, why can't we get in front of some of this stuff? Why can't we just make wholesale changes, sweeping declarations that are just done because, you know what? This is the right thing to do. This is the proper thing to do. This only makes sense.
Puppet masters.
It's
puppet masters. The idea that someone or some group at the very top is pulling a serious set of strings that ain't gonna let it happen yet. And it's not, like you said, it's not because it impacts the product or the sale of the product. It's because they don't want to see it happen. It's got to be. Why aren't there changes in, just to your argument, why aren't there changes in society to the role of law enforcement or community give back or programs of all type to make this country or the world a better place, yada, yada, yada. I mean, it's you go soup to nuts, and I'd say, look, it because some people or group of people, and I don't think it's too general, right? I think it actually gets specific at the highest level. At some point, someone's pulling the strings on that and saying this is non-negotiable. And I think I'm a political science guy, so I think that's what Robert Reich has spent the last part of his career, the old Clinton Secretary of the Treasury, if I got that right, actually, Treasury, I'm not sure. But anyway, sorry, Robert. That's what he spent the last part of his life and career, you know, railing against. Super capitalism when it's not working the way that it was intended.
I think the thing we have to remember is proximity, you know, like proximity bias, comfortability, all of those things go into play. We tend to gravitate towards the people that we have the most in common with. Those tend to be people who look like us at some capacity. And we understand that with that comes a natural inherent desire to hire people that are subordinates or that work for you or that work for your product that looks something like you.
Thank you for narrowing it down, because I was out there in a pretty broad brush, but you Absolutely. Brought it back to what you want to talk about anyway, which I think is, and I think you're right. So go ahead.
And so, but even then, because I don't want to just limit this to one thing.
Right.
But they're the front porch. You have to see them. They're the front porch. So if you haven't figured out what we're talking about the NFL and their lack of.
We're actually talking about Brian Flores.
But even beyond Brian Flores is just the vehicle.
And he's the newest.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a yearly thing. Yep. Before Brian Flores, David Culley got fired after 1 year when he took a team that was supposed to win no games and had them respectable at the end of a season. And he got one year and was told, you're done. And now we're getting word that the Houston Texans, who may have taken over as the worst run franchise in the NFL, is on the brink of hiring Lovie Smith. So you fire David Culley, an old black coach, to then bring in another old black coach. Like what was the point? And by the way, keep all of the same staff the same. You know, all of the staff that was with Culley are probably going to end up working for Lovie Smith.
Can I jump in?
What?
Can I jump in?
Yeah, feel free.
Yeah.
Just don't yell at me.
Okay. Sorry. The difference between David Culley and Brian Flores, and so the most recent is that was a unprecedented assault. Assault meaning positively, by the way, but attack by Flores on the NFL. He called him out, and I don't know if anyone's called him out quite as publicly, so that makes it different. I would say it compares, and I probably read this, to Curt Flood in baseball in the 70s with free agency. When you take a stand that nobody, you know, people have talked about it, people have taken their stands, but I don't know if anyone put themselves, I mean, Colin Kaepernick did, in a different way, but people don't generally put themselves out on, you know, they don't put themselves out like that. And good for him. So I think it is a little bit unique. And then it really, honestly, like in your reply to David Culley and the whole Houston deal, and I'm assuming Jacksonville is the other worst run franchise, but the answer is, you know what? We've got a big problem. If you know, depending on who we hire, we got some issues. So I would say that. So that to me, as soon as I saw Lovie Smith, I said, okay, well, that's damage control, maybe. I have no business saying any of this, by the way. And the only other thing I'd say is I have zero basis for evaluating either one of them, or for that matter, the Houston Texans. So, listeners, please, you've heard my stance before on football. I know little.
I will say, I'll say this because I don't want us to stay here on it, but I do want to address the fact that the thing that makes it different for Flores is that a coach who just came off of two winning seasons at 41 years old, who everybody pretty much agrees was fired for no real legitimate reason, decided instead of just shutting up and taking it, which is what other coaches have done when this has happened to them, because they don't want to screw up their opportunity to possibly get back. That guy said, no, you're not going to drag my name through the mud. You're not going to use me as a puppet to be not as a puppet, but as a false front, so that you can just go out and hire whomever you want to. This is wrong, and I am going to essentially commit career suicide by doing this. And that's what you have to admire, and that's the difference, I think, between what he's dealing with and what possibly Flood was dealing with, is because I don't think there was ever going to be a situation where Flood wasn't going to be able to play, correct?
Yeah, I would say Flood. I mean, I don't want to be too flippant about it. You know, I think Flood possibly took a position that put him in harm's way more. And I don't know. That's what I would say to you. Like, he took a position that, you know, like.
You mean harm's way as in physical harm or harm's way as
violence? No, violence. When you look at the history of the 60s and what people who were outspoken black leaders.
Okay.
They're. Yeah, I think that. And then don't tell me, you know, like every once in a while after the fact, you'll hear about the FBI, you know, whether they had to protect or do this or do that. So I'm saying, yeah, I think in general, not to say Brian Flores doesn't face some type of something, but I think Kurt Flood potentially faced more because remember, he was taking on America's pastime. He was taking on the great game. And baseball today is not, so we don't really, you know, it's apples and oranges, but that would be my difference there.
Is like non-existent. Baseball today is dead.
Right.
Like not even close to alive. And it's a shame because I really do love me some good baseball.
Like, yeah, speed it up. I'll like it.
I love me some good baseball, but I can't rock with this stuff. This baseball stuff is up. You know what? We'll have to talk about that another day because I feel like there are some really easy tweaks that could be made that would make baseball way better.
I agree. So that's going to be one. Tweaks for baseball.
We're going to tweak some baseball later, but I want to pay service to our listeners who like when we get into our coaching bag. And so I want to open up the bag and ask some questions. Championship prep. You have some experience with preparing for championship games. What makes it different?
Well, nothing and everything. So, I mean, on one hand,
nothing and everything.
Yeah, I'm kind of a, you know, Phil Jackson Zen-like guy. So, you know, that answer covers a spectrum, but nothing makes it different in the sense that your confidence always comes from your preparation. So today we talk about trust the process, right? Whatever it's going to be, but that starts, you know, day one or before day one, whenever it starts in any championship. And then it really starts again as you get kind of closer to the actual championship flight of whatever it is we're talking about, right? Like Bill Belichick's famous, you know, hey, in the tournament, right? He always refers to the playoffs as the tournament. And once you know it's one and done, once you know the next time you lose, you're out, then that is really when the second level of the preparation and process begins. So that right? So the nothing changes to me would be just that drilling down into the into the frickin' small stuff, the details, and handling your business, okay? And then the everything changes at all the different levels that we might talk about, right? Because the bright lights, not everyone, players and coaches, stand up to the bright lights. And so we dissect coaches who seem to have trouble in big games, and then we talk about players maybe that can't get it done in the big games, or teams, right? So the only team I really feel sorry for, by the way, in my lifetime, is the Buffalo Bills. I mean, it's really because I think that was a team start to finish, seemed to be like a team of integrity that deserved a better fate, and in some respects didn't get it. Jim Kelly, and I mean all of them, not just Jim Kelly, but four runs. So anyway, nothing and everything.
If we're sticking with your nothing and everything,
framework.
I'm gonna roll with you on the nothing and everything. So the nothing is that once the ball goes up, once the whistle is blown, once the ball is kicked, it's the game.
It's absolutely the game.
So nothing changes from that standpoint.
That was and that was Hoosiers, by the way, because Gene Hackman went into the gym and put up the ladder and said, "Oh, look at that! It's 10 foot high."
Yep. That was definitely the way Hackman looked at it in Hoosiers. Way to pull a Hackman reference out of this. The everything though, I believe is that nothing's a secret at that point. Like by the time you get to the championship game, your opponent knows who you are. So then the everything becomes who has the legitimate curveball.
100%, total agreement.
Curveball. Like if you don't have, in my opinion, when you're talking about a championship game, which is most likely going to pin two equally or similarly talented teams against each other, the difference is who has that one thing that the other person hasn't seen yet, or just the other person can't deal with.
To be honest with you, I think it's two things.
Okay.
And I think you're right on. I say so. If you went with my everything and nothing, I'm going to go with your curveball. I refer to your curveball in hoops, and I stole this from Coach Mike Daly at Nazareth College a long time ago from Five Star Basketball Camp. Just a cheap promo there. But as the back pocket. Any coach worth their salt always has something in the back pocket. And so in those games, and for me, it's traditionally, like breaking out a change of defense when that's nothing we ordinarily might do a ton of during the regular season or practice a lot, but there might be a spot for it. Maybe it's having a wrinkle on a play that everyone knows you run, but you have a wrinkle. So you have that, and football talks a lot about that because no game, no sport is any more dissected, and to your point, than football. But then the other thing that I'm saying is it in those situations, it's a test of will. In my opinion, I believe in will. And so one team or another is going to impose its will over the length of time that they've got, which, and I'll give you my example, sticking with my football, right? The greatest comeback in the history of football was, by the way, the New England Patriots, who you've been hating on a little bit throughout this podcast, coming back on the Atlanta Falcons because they didn't quit. They imposed their will for the full 60 minutes, and somehow or another, the Falcons let off the gas.
That's such a biased take right there. That may be your worst take of the day. That will is what happened. You know what the will was? Of Atlanta to just all of a sudden decide they didn't want to score any points anymore because New England hadn't stopped them the entire first half. Like,
that's a lack of will.
It's the same thing that happened to the Kansas City Chiefs. It's the same thing.
They lost their resolve. The Chiefs did it too. For whatever reason, they lost their resolve. Hey, man, the game is 60 minutes. You keep it down for 60 minutes. Whatever got in their way, they didn't. They go home, lost their resolve.
Okay.
I do not believe for one second, if the Chiefs hadn't won the year before, that they wouldn't have got back, that they wouldn't have advanced to the Super Bowl this year.
But they didn't win the year before. They won two years before.
Well, that's what I meant.
And they went last year. And right. So, like, the resolve should have been, oh, we didn't get it done last year. So now we're back. We got the fire burning again. So even within there, I don't know. I will say I agree with you in your take, not necessarily about the Patriots. Here's what I think is an actual better example. Baylor versus Gonzaga last year. You have two teams that are constructed to win a championship, both equally capable of doing so, meeting at the end, and one team's will, which is we are just going to be in your shirt until you break. That went up against the finesse, speed, pace and space of Gonzaga. And what happened was when they clashed, Gonzaga's other four outside of Jalen Suggs crumbled. Those other guys just didn't get it done.
Here's what I'm going to say to you. One, love the analogy, particularly now we're in hoops, okay? Good for you. And on most days, I'd let that slide. But in the spirit of episode 10 or 11, I'm not letting you slide. I'm not letting it slide. And the bottom, what really happened, but no one knew it until they saw it, is that you had essentially you had one team, Baylor, an NBA team, playing a G League team for all the marbles. A G League team that had been masquerading as a championship contender because by the time it was over, clearly the better team won and would have won not just that day, but would have won, 85 out of 100 times.
Okay, if you're going to go to 100 and say 85 out of 100 times, but what if a couple of those shots that Gonzaga put up early had drained, like we've seen it do so many times before, where they were able to just 3-3-3, and all of a sudden you looked up, you were 12-2. It was 12-2 Gonzaga early.
You know what I would have done? I would have told and this is exactly what Scott Drew would have done. He would have gone to his Courtney Beasley, whoever that was, and he would have said, "Hey, Tyrone,
yo, Tyrone.
go D those dudes up, man. Like, and you know what? We don't really care that they got a lead." And in my championship experience, during the run that we had here, we're not going to go into it, but I think in three of those four wins, we came from double-digit leads at halftime. Double digits, including the last one. Okay.
I watched two of them.
Yeah.
Double digits.
Yeah, we were down. One of them was the one you watched against Andre Blatch and Darrell Wright.
Yeah.
We were down 11, and Al Lewis and I were going – we're in a lot of trouble. And by the way, that wrinkle we're talking about, that little diamond in one with one guy on Blatch inside, that little matchup zone, that's garbage. They're tearing us apart. If we're going to go down like this, let's just go down. And then the guys went out and rolled.
Yeah. But okay, so here's my thing about the curveball, though, right? It doesn't. And I like the back pocket analogy. I think that definitely comes into play.
You froze on me, and I didn't even say anything.
You froze on me.
Okay, well, that was a double freeze.
It's a double freeze. I never freeze. That was a double freeze. That's a Black Panther reference. I don't know what just happened, but I'm going to say it. So it's not the back pocket that I refer to when I refer to the curveball. Right. It's really more of the battle of will that you're talking about. Okay. Hey, I have a pitch that you can't hit. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep throwing this mofo until somebody proves they can hit it. It's Mariano Rivera. When you say, hey, it's the ninth inning, and you hear Enter Sandman come on, it's game over, buddy. Like, that's a wrap. Mariano comes on, it's over. He comes in the eighth inning, you're getting five outs with Mariano Rivera, because you can't do anything about this one pitch that he has that he's been throwing for 20 damn years. Like, I think that in the case of New England, they were never going to admit defeat.
Yeah.
They didn't admit defeat versus Seattle when they should have lost, and the Seahawks should have just ran it in with Marshawn on the 1 yard line. They were never going to admit defeat. You had to beat them. They weren't going to admit defeat when they're sitting there down to the Falcons. And I think that's their curveball. If that's their back.
That's not their curveball. You're mixing euphemisms, you know. I need to hear about your curveball, because when I hear about Mariano Rivera with your description, all I hear is will and resolve.
I'm telling you that's what I'm talking about when I say curveball.
Is will?
Is the will. You can't hit this curveball. That's what I'm saying. And
that's the curveball.
And so Baylor.
I'm saying the curveball. Because we need to define terms. Sure. No. We need to define terms. I mean, I said back pocket, but to me, the curveball is when they go trickery in football and they go with that throw to the quarterback, you know, into the end, you know, that little Philadelphia Eagle play.
Yeah,
right. That's a curveball, Philly special, when you need to get a touchdown because you understand field goals aren't going to win, which we saw a lot in the playoffs this year. So. That to me is curveball, and then resolve and will that you're talking about is something else.
Well, and so that's what I was saying. I agree with the back pocket reference.
Right. Okay.
But that's not what I'm talking about when I say curveball. I was really more referring to when you said there was two things.
Right.
The second thing was the thing that I was referring to. I have a pitch that you can't hit. And and so it's like with Baylor, it was like, dude. A, we're grown ass men out here.
Yep.
We're grown men, and we're just going to attack. And by the way, we're going to do that 10 deep. We're not going to do that with five and six dudes. Right. We're going to roll 10 deep, and we're going to make it so that you can't bring your seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth guy off the bench because you don't trust them.
Yeah.
Because they're babies. Or just because they're not built for this level.
Well, we've talked about it before, depth, you know, that's on an earlier podcast. And so each team goes into that thing, you know, built a different way. And rotation is part of that different way, right? One running back that you feed the ball 30 times to versus, the modern game, you have three running backs and specialization, all that sort of stuff. But.
And by the way, I don't know if Gonzaga is going to be able to answer that question again this year.
I don't either, but I want to finish up on a thought because you got me thinking on that one too, which is to say that you kind of boil it down to one thing. Maybe I boil it down to both of those, and I do think anyone, any team, I think the one thing is the most important thing. So I think your curveball, my will, that is the most important thing. No ifs, ands, or buts. But every good team, every good player, every good organization, you have plan A, but you bet your ass you got plan B, and you hope you don't got to break out plan B, right? But when the jump shot ain't falling. You go to the hoop and get yourself to the foul line. When the organization ain't succeeding this way, then we got to try it that way. When the game is getting out of hand this way, so even Baylor just went with their fastball. They went with Rivera. I don't know what their, in my back pocket was. I'd have to review the game to see what Gonzaga tried to do when they realized, like I did, like very early in that game, we are in a lot. We're in a whole heap of a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if Mark Few has a curve.
I guarantee you he does. The double freeze.
I just said that I don't know if Mark Few has that. I don't know if he has a back pocket.
I think I don't know what it is. The little bit I know about him or seen in clinics or that sort of thing, I have a feeling he does.
You have a feeling that he does, and it just didn't materialize for him in that Baylor game? Did it just get away
because too
fast? Did he wait too long to go to it?
Walt Fuller and I one day were having a talk and about coaches we respected, and it came down to whether you were kind of a Tom Izzo, Bob Knight, like bread and butter kind of guy versus the multiple Rick Pitino change, you know, surprise change sort of thing. And so he said, you know, and I said, I'm not really a trick you guy. I'm not trying to trick you a lot, right? That was my deal. And he goes, well, Whit, what do you do down 10 with a minute to go? And I said, well, I'm not sure what I do, but I'll tell you what Jeff Van Gundy says he'll do, because I listened to the clinic that was shared with me by another, actually current pro coach, but lose. That's what I'll do. Down 10 minutes to go, I lose. So I think Mark Few, on some level that he probably wouldn't acknowledge publicly, looked up. Correct.
Because you can't.
Looked up at that game at some point and said, we lose. They're too good today. I don't, you know, that's what I think.
That's, it's tough when you have to just – you got to just admit it. You got to just admit it. And the clock's not zero.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. I'm sorry to step in.
No.
It happened this year at Bridgeton Academy. Shout out to the soccer team. Made the tournament, a NEPSAC tournament for the first time in like more than a decade. And the coach is a friend of mine. He's a hell of a good coach and guy. And the team did a heck of a job. And they got beat in the semifinals, I think. Okay. And so they went into the chapel, which you know, and there was a little sports report, and they didn't really get a lot of buzz, which bothered me to begin with. But then, they got a couple catcalls. They got a couple like questions about, you know, how they accepted the loss. And one of the kids, interestingly now, who was an international player, said the better team won. And he didn't get booed. But people like kind of like the kids, right? The young guys in the audience just kind of, and I wasn't grandstanding. I swear to God, I just stood up and said, hey, look it. You guys are crazy. You don't get it. I said, that kid just had the nerve, the guts, the courage to stand up in front of you and say, you know what? They were better. And some of you have made a, you know, and I am exaggerating, but some of you have made a freaking lifetime of making excuses for yourself about why this, and this. And this kid's owning it. And it's one of the most mature things I've heard in that school chapel as it relates to sports in a long time. And I felt great for the kid. And I was standing up for him. But, I mean, man, that was him. You know, and so I think, and this is another – edition. This will be on 14 and 15. I just think the international culture, like mirroring sport and society, has been around a little longer. So they just have a little less arrogance about them. And sometimes the other team just beats you and they're willing to accept it. In this country, we don't accept a damn thing.
Well, I think that comes to that comes with the American hubris, right?
Exactly. Like
that's what we have over here. It's the gift and the curse.
Right.
It's the gift and the curse.
Because it's nothing and it's everything. It's
nothing and it's everything. We've seen it. We've seen times where everybody said it was over and they were the better team and they were going to, and then that person or that team or that entity was able to get over the hump and get it done. And then we've seen times where it doesn't work out and people still have that feeling in them that I could have gotten it done. You don't hear a lot of they were just the better team, because it's hard for us as Americans, because that's not the way in which we were drilled to accept or to think about it. But it makes a lot of sense. And as coaches, we actually lie to players. We actually lie to players. We do it. When you're sitting there and there's umpteen amount of minutes left into the game, and you and your brain know this is not going to go our way tonight, you can't just walk over to your players and go, "Hey, fellas, it's not our night tonight." You've got to continue to stoke a fire or try to get something together, because you know that you're playing for something beyond today.
Yeah, with that
means you gotta tell them some lies.
Yeah, I agree with you, other than to say what the example you use, that could be one of your back pocket deals. Like, I wouldn't pull it very often in a year, but I mean, I'm telling you, we won our biggest game of the year last year in a back-to-back situation. When I told the team in no uncertain terms, A, they would not win the next day, and B, I really didn't care if they won the next day. I just wanted to see us play better. So I do, and that was not for the purpose of trying to get a victory. It was for the purpose of trying to get them to understand that we got to get our focus on the right things. So depending on how much is time left in your example, right, you might play that card the same way that you know, Red Auerbach would get the technical or do something else.
Yeah. Or the way, but
only, those are all that stuff. When you start resorting to that stuff now, you're in trouble.
Well, my point is that those things are few and far between. You can't pull them out right all the time, obviously.
Right.
But then you also have to almost look and take that temperature of the team before you decide which one you're going to pull.
Absolutely right.
Because, like, if you just look into their eyes and you know, hey, this ain't going to happen tonight, that might not be the time for the, hey, we're going to win this effing game. We're going to win this freaking game. And say it to them with the conviction. I've done it in the last year. We were down, and I walked in at halftime. I said, "I don't understand. Y'all are acting like we're going to lose." I was like, "We're winning this game." And then I went and laid out exactly what we were going to do to win the game. And it was like, I don't know if you remember, years ago, I hit a shot. I was golfing. I hit a shot that felt like I was Tiger Woods. Knocked it over some trees. It hit onto the green rope, more within 3 feet of the cup. I called you immediately. I said, "Rick," I said, "Whit, I've hit the greatest shot I've ever hit in my life." I was like, "It looked just like a Tiger Woods shot." And you said, "Well, it makes sense because you had the visual." You said you've seen it. So you were able to put that into practice, and then obviously you just hit a perfect shot. But it was the point of seeing it. I think because I laid it out, this is what we were going to do. They had a clear understanding of what the mission was and what they needed to do. And once the first thing happens, and now the second thing happens, now it's not about, oh, he was just talking. Now it's belief. Oh, yo, he's on to something.
Yeah, well, your grab bag, you're going, like, I mean, you're big time in the grab bag right now, because that's all, in my view, you're right. You're 100% right. And that's the stuff that obviously is the art versus the science of coaching, and connect it back to your hubris statement, my experience, which I think would no longer care anymore, but my limited international experience would say that at one time the Europeans leaned exclusively, maybe to a fault, on the science of things, including in their training. And it was the free flow that you and I have talked about before, the creativity parts of the game that maybe they were lacking. And then they had to, and again, I don't have all the details on it. It's just my sense. But then once they caught up to both their training methodologies, which was on the docket for this pod, but we'll maybe leave it, or maybe we'll go there. Once their training caught up to the the artful side of things. Because I think they've been ahead mentally for a long time. Based on what I know, a lot of our sciences, psychology came from overseas. I just don't think their coaches were using it, kind of like in this country too. But then their coaches, to your point, found the sweet spot. So I think there's a sweet spot there, and you are nailing it in your analysis. So any coach that's listening or, knows exactly what you're talking about.
All right, so we were going to get to a couple, but we OD'd at the beginning on some. OD means overdose.
I kind of knew that one.
We OD'd a little in the beginning on a topic that wasn't something we were actually going to focus on. You know what happened?
Hey, listen, just because I had a hard time like trying to get my earbuds connected to my not my Bluetooth, because I had to turn off my Bluetooth, but whatever the heck, whatever I had to turn off to turn on, just because I wasn't perfect in getting that done doesn't mean I don't know what ODing is.
No, I was just saying, because at the beginning we had to get you to a voice level that wasn't sending the meters into like red. you were hyped up so much. You were all hyped up as if you had just chugged a cup of Mountain Dew.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, because if you want to make that championship run you're talking about, you got to get a rested team there. We didn't talk about that. We're talking about all this resolve and will and work and back pocket. But if your team's fatigued at the end of the year, they burned out too early. That actually is another thing on that whole question, which is how do you write in different sports, you call it tapering. Right? Every coach is trying to get his team to play their best at the end, obviously. You've already said it. Teams are different, this and that. Sometimes you peak too early, right? The Patriots this year, sorry to keep bringing them up, but seemed like the 7 in a row and they peaked too early and whatever happened, but they flamed out. And other teams, you want to, you got to get that right. So huge rested team is a good team. A rested wit is a good wit.
I like it. So if therein lies the case, then let's stay here for the end of it, and we can pick up the training thing another day.
Yeah.
How do you find that sweet spot? Because how do you say, hey, we're trying to get our team to this rested, but the mission is to win every game.
So, I mean, in the NBA, it's right, load management. In the college game, it's the idea of rotation, where some teams, in fact, will go 10 throughout a year, 9, cut it down to, 6, 7, or 8 later in the year, getting ready to run. So you get to rotation issues. Practice times are being cut. So there's a lot of quadrant thought about days of the week, which is going into every sport and every type of training, where each day kind of has its own meter, right? So if today, let's just say for me, is a high volume, high intensity, like length of time and intensity, which it seems to be. Now, tomorrow is going to be a backed off day.
Free throw shooting.
Yep. Tomorrow, I just got to shoot free throws, man.
Shooting free throws and doing biking drills. That's it.
That's all it is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Keeping it simple. So, yeah, I think that's, there's a couple off the top. But, when you talk about that stuff, everyone's easing up on the practice time or total intensity time, whatever. Well,
and that's a great thing. And I really want to delve into this. Into training.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry. Episode 10 or 11.
10 or 11. We do what
whatever.
We do.
Yeah. Hey, I was going to say this. Like, it helps me. It would help any coach, right? The better my training staff is. So that could be strength and conditioning guy, which I'm lucky. Our guy's extraordinary right now. He's an absolute freak. He's the best. Okay. Or the medical training staff. When you can trust those people, if you're in a situation to have them, now, wow, you can even pay a little bit less attention, which is great, because now you can just focus on this other stuff. But when you're your regular high school coach, right, who's washing the uniforms and taping ankles and trying to get them in the weight room at, you know, 6 a.m. or whenever the heck you're going to do that stuff, that becomes awfully hard to then balance all this other stuff that we're talking about. So I think that's part of the secret too. When you have pros around you, when you have people around you that know what they're doing, and you know, like, I mean, I had Al Lewis and Tony Wright around me. And I said at the end of those years, like, I don't, you could have made Tony Wright, that we would have had the same result if he was a head coach in February. I mean, I think once your team establishes certain things, that if you have that synergy with the people you're working with, you can get unbelievable results.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the issue in football with trying to get a rested team there is the need to keep the sharpness, because plays work so interconnected with, you know, these people all 11 working together. You don't really get the singularity of basketball, where sometimes just one person's just better than everyone else. I think that it becomes difficult, but I also think that's because a lot of the archaic nature of football still exists today.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm stepping in a lot of football today. It's like I went to school for the last two. I went to football school for the last 2 weeks while we haven't been on. I went to football school and tried to learn a little something. So what I'm just saying is that the simplest thing football people did to evolve was less days in pads. As an example.
Yeah. That's what some did.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, some do it. Yeah. And then there's others. Like my evolve from what I experienced as a player was shorter practice time, higher intensity, more throughout. Football tends to be like crank it up, shut it down, move to the next thing, crank it up, shut it down. That's how football was forever. And now you're seeing a lot more people go with the, hey, we're going to be out here for an hour and 25. We're going to be on the football field for an hour and 25 minutes, not 3 hours like I went through, and not several times in the day or 2-3 practices in the day. We're going to be out here for an hour and 35 minutes, but we're going balls to the wall for an hour and 35 minutes. And it's hit, grab water while you're moving to the next thing. Go. Everything full speed, everything high intensity, and get the training that way. Because in a real game, you're going to get the go, stop. So it'll be much easier for those guys to get back to square one. But then that all depends on if you're working with coaches, or if you have other guys that are bought in and understand that philosophy to help your team get to that point at the end of the season when they're a lot fresher, because you haven't beat their bodies down with being in pads 3 days a week out of four, or you haven't run their legs into the ground with 3 hour and 3.5 hour practices.
Well, in a cheap advertisement for my roots at the University of New Hampshire and recently retired head coach Sean McDonald, who is one of the best, and his protege Chip Kelly, that people know better, from what I gather,
not one of the best.
Well, I'll tell you that would be another topic for another day.
I'm only joking. I love Chip Kelly.
Thank you. Because as it relates to this conversation. You know, the way I understand it, he's obviously, and he made popular at Oregon when he went out there with his offense, and then the Eagles. Belichick consulted with him because of the practice regimen you're talking with, the pace of practice and doing it a different way. And not to say Chip was the only one doing it, but he was on the front edge of some of that.
He weaponized it. He weaponized it. He didn't just do it. He weaponized it. Similar to the MMA fighters who weaponized pace within the game to change the way in which we thought about mixed martial arts, was the same way that Chip Kelly weaponized that speed and that fluidity. I know one of the things that he did that was different was instead of the day before a game being a walkthrough, the day before the game was high intensity, full speed, you know, crank it up, because he wanted the bodies to go into the game already in that, you know, in that mode. I think somebody said, I forget who it was, I wish I could give attribution, but it was similar to the way you have to race a racehorse the day before. You don't jog them, you open right. them up and you let them go. And I mean, obviously I was like, comparing players to horse racing, but I get the analogy. It makes perfect sense, you know? Yeah. And so, it's interesting. Cause I think that's definitely something. You came out guns blazing today, and you came out guns blazing today because we haven't potted in 2 weeks. And so you were ready, and that rest. But how much could it have been rust? You know what I'm saying? Those two weeks could have been rust, and maybe even to a certain extent there was some rust that just you know the vibrations of your voice just popped off as you were going through it. You know, but I'm sure it's a fine line. No one has the perfect, you know, the perfect recipe to make sure that you're getting to the important part of a season where you need to be physically, but I'm sure it's just as important as making sure that you have that back pocket ready to go when you need it.
Yeah, and I'll give you my last word, on it that I'd throw into the conversation, into your bag, is trust. And so, and I think you already actually used it. So I would say, A, when the fur's flying, you got to trust yourself. And when the fur's flying, the team has got to trust you.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll leave it right there. That's the Zebra Stripes podcast, episode 10 or 11. We'll figure it out. We'll put it out there. If you're looking and you see episode 10 or 11, it's not an actual joke. We're going to call this episode 10 or 11. So we thank you for joining us. Get in the pod wherever you get the pod from. Make sure that you rate. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, wherever else you find it. And leave a comment. We love to hear from you. Love to hear what you have to say about it. If you follow us on Twitter at Gene Clemens or at Whit LeJour, correct, Coach?
Yeah. Yep. 10 or 11.
10 or 11, you know.
At Whit LeJour.
Find us on Twitter. Leave a comment, man. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, y'all stay blessed.